The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
On Saturday, Iran launched an attack on Israel, escalating the conflict in the Middle East and leaving the world waiting to see how Tel Aviv would respond to the attacks. We'll speak to the Middle East correspondent for The Economist, Greg Karlstrom, in just a minute. But first, President of the US Middle East Project and former Israeli peace negotiator Daniel Levy is with us. Daniel, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Situation exceptionally tense, all eyes on Israel to see how they will respond. Is it inevitable that there will be a response of a military nature?
Inevitable, no. I think you have a narrative that the Israelis can tell themselves and that their allies internationally led by the US are spinning, which is what a marvelously successful interception of these Iranian drones and missiles. This is now, we can draw a line under this. Israel has shown it can work with its allies. It can show that it has a defense system that is bar none, the most effective in the world. Look, I don't think that is an accurate reflection of what actually happened. I think the Iranians broadcast exactly what they were going to do. They did not intend for this to be destructive, and it played out, let's be honest, pretty much as the Americans and the Iranians intended.
It was one of the few military strikes that I can remember where it was advertised in advance of the missiles arriving over Israeli airspace.
So, exactly. This is where we're going to send them. This is when. Are you all prepared just to make sure we're okay? Take two. So, yeah. I mean, that's exactly now. The assumption is that that would be enough. There's one problem with that, which is, will Netanyahu play along with it? Because I think he feels that he has the Americans where he wants them, that they will have to line up with him. They've maneuvered themselves into a corner. I think he's not wrong in that respect, unless the Americans go a bit of backbone and say, no, we're drawing a line and we're willing to do things which the carnage and the plausible genocide in Gaza weren't enough for them to draw a line. 14,000 dead Palestinian children wasn't enough for them to draw a line. But on this, we are actually going to say no. That, I'm still not convinced, is what they will do. Therefore, the Israelis, I think, are either going to respond or they are going to say, well, if we don't, we want something in return. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether the something in return is on the Gaza front in terms of reduce the heat, not that I think the heat is that heavy, on us on Gaza. We're going to do rougher. We don't want to hear, we know you can go on pro forma, you can appear in front of a podium and say something about how you don't like it, but we're going to do it and there's not going to be any blowback. Or perhaps they want something else on their shopping list, on their wish list, on their regional normalization list. Or there will actually be a response, and then I think we will find out whether this was Iran demonstrating that it can reach, but it didn't actually want to cause destruction. And next time around, it will be a lot worse. There is a lot, I must just note for you, that there is a decent amount of pushback and commentary inside Israel itself that don't do anything reckless. Israel is not ready for a major second front. And the killing of the Iranian senior military figures in that embassy compound in Damascus itself was reckless and led to a response we didn't anticipate. This is not a good idea. The question is, where does Netanyahu come out?
Yes, Greg Karlstrom, if I can ask you, Middle East correspondent for The Economist, the Israeli cabinet has a broad spectrum contained therein. You have right-wingers who will want to take action immediately. You will have more moderate voices as well. And sitting somewhere towards the right of the group would be Benjamin Netanyahu. Can he keep them together to form an outcome that will keep everybody happy?
Well, I think a couple of things about the cabinet. I mean, first, you're right that there is a spectrum, particularly within the war cabinet, which is the decision-making body over the past 6 months that's been in charge of security matters. So you have a couple of centrist figures there, former army chiefs who joined the war cabinet, but previously were members of the political opposition. And then you have Netanyahu and his right-wing allies. But what they agree on, I think all of them, from what we've heard about the War Cabinet's deliberations, is that there is broad support for some kind of retaliation against Iran. Now, that can take different forms. It doesn't have to mean a massive military strike against military sites or nuclear sites or something of that nature in Iran. But there is broad support for doing something. And the question is really what that something is going to be. Now, Netanyahu himself, he's someone you could say for much of his political career was actually quite cautious about using military force. You look at the decades in which he threatened strikes against Iran's nuclear facilities and never actually followed through, in part because he was worried about the consequences. He's normally been quite hesitant to approve bold military actions, but this is not the same Netanyahu. The Netanyahu of the past 6 months, of the past year, is not the same prime minister that he was previously. And there are a lot of concerns, both within Israel and especially outside of Israel, about the decision-making right now and his ability to navigate through this very, very fraught moment.
It is almost an isolationist policy that they are employing in Israel. They almost don't care what the rest of the world thinks, but at the same time, they have to be conscious of it.
They should be conscious of it, and that's the message they're getting from many of their allies right now. I mean, part of the reason why this defense was so successful on Saturday night and Sunday morning wasn't just because of Israel's own air defenses. It was because there were American and British and French and Jordanian planes involved in shooting down these Iranian drones. There were other Arab states that contributed intelligence and surveillance assets and other things. So there was an ad hoc coalition put together to protect Israel from this attack. And you have now heads of state and diplomats who are telling the Israelis, you owe us a debt. We helped protect you. You need to listen to us and not do anything rash, not rush into a response against Iran that is going to escalate this into an even bigger war. And they have a very compelling case. Whether or not Israel is going to listen to that argument, though, is a different
but
matter.
Israel's petulance, if I could call it that, could be their undoing here. Because if they do respond in a way that forces Iran to take actions where they don't ring ahead in advance going, you know, you better put up the defences there, guys, we're coming in, and act unilaterally, then we are facing an escalation and Israel will become very lonely very quickly.
I agree with that. They'll become very lonely very quickly and they will put their allies, particularly the United States, in a very uncomfortable position of having to decide either not to get involved, which is hard to imagine Joe Biden doing, especially in an election year, or getting involved in a larger Middle East war that they don't want to be a part of. They would effectively be dragged into it by one of their client states in the region. And that's obviously not a position that American policymakers want to be in.
Greg, this isn't going to be resolved quickly. We know that. But to take the pressure off is important. Israel didn't respond immediately, even though some within the cabinet had wanted that to happen. The more we go forward where there isn't a retaliatory attack, does that give enough breathing space, do you think, to allow the world to relax a small bit?
I think it helps. Specifically, for the Iranians, I think it helps. If Israel were to be seen, you know, last night as retaliating for a strike the day before, that would be humiliating for the Iranians who had sought to deter Israel by carrying out this attack. And so I think the more temporal distance there is between the Iranian strike and the Israeli retaliation, that helps, that's useful. But the question, still the ultimate question, is how that retaliation looks. Does Israel carry out a big strike inside of Iran? Does it settle for strikes outside in Syria or other countries on Iranian targets? Or does it do things like cyber attacks that aren't quite so dramatic and are a bit deniable? The real question here is the nature of the Israeli retaliation. They don't agree on what they're going to do yet. And again, they're under a lot of pressure about what to do.
But also opening up a second front when there's already a war underway has never been proven to be a good idea for any country that finds itself in that situation. Greg Karlstrom, Middle East correspondent for The Economist. Before that, Daniel Levy, who is a former Israeli peace negotiator. Thank you both very much for joining us. One text on this: can we not talk about how bombing an embassy is illegal and as a result we should condemn it? I'm pretty sure that the Irish had been involved in condemnations of that attack as well as the Iranian attacks. Every attack has to be condemned because of what it is, the nature of an attack. No matter who the targets here, it's hard to see how you can justify it. And one more, let Israel start a war. Why should the US and UK back them unconditionally? Why doesn't the US and UK stop sticking their noses in where they're not wanted? Well, if Israel starts a war, then that entire region gets dragged into it and people suffer. And war is never a good thing. I think we on this island can stand up and acknowledge that quite readily.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.